I will add my good morning. That was super, that was lame. Anyway, well, if I haven't had a chance to meet you yet, my name is Jeremy Bobas. I'm the pastor of student ministries here, and it's my privilege, it's my honor to be able to bring the word to you this morning. A number of years ago, I'm not quite sure how many years ago, I know it was long enough ago that we were driving a 1997 Mercury Marquis. Yeah, all right. So people thought we were cops a lot when we were driving. But we were driving back from someplace kind of far, and we were listening to the radio, okay? 1997 Mercury Marquis, there was no auxiliary cable. There was no Bluetooth capability. I think at this point our CD player had busted and wasn't working anymore. So we were back in the Stone Ages of the radio, the end. And a song came on that my son liked. And he, when it was over, he said, "Can we listen to that again?" And I said, "No. Like, you got to be patient until it comes back on again." And the look of confusion on his face was hilarious, because he's never not lived in a world without DVR, right? Without Netflix, without Spotify. He could always rewind something he wanted to see again, or watch something that he watched yesterday, fast forward commercials, listen to any song he wants to at any time he wants to, stream anything. He never had to wait till next week to find out what happens in a show like us old timers. You know what I mean? He could binge watch. So that's the world. So at this moment, patience wasn't his natural response in that scenario. And to be honest, patience is not something that really comes natural to any of us, right? If we're really honest with ourselves. We get annoyed with waiting in traffic. We get annoyed with slow checkout workers at the grocery store. We get annoyed with people in front of us at Starbucks who can't make up their mind. We get annoyed at those things. We find it irritating when we text somebody, when we instant message somebody, and they don't get back to us immediately. We get annoyed with our spouse when they're taking longer to get ready than we want them to. My spouse is right there. We get annoyed when they're taking too long to run an errand and we want them home. We get annoyed and irritated with our kids when they don't change their behavior fast enough for our liking. Now, add in our culture, add in the culture we live in and the technology that we have at our disposal where we can have, read, see, watch, listen to anything we want, anytime we want, and it's no wonder that our impatience has just grown and grown and grown. I mean, we can't wait for normal shipping anymore, so we pay extra for overnight delivery. We want a computer that turns on instantly. We want internet that works at the speed of sound, right? And we get annoyed when our streaming video buffers. So there was a study done by the Berkeley Institute for the Future of Young Americans in 2018, and they found that anxiety and depression are the most common presenting mental health concerns of students visiting college counseling centers. And they're the only presenting concerns with a clear upward trend over the past 4 years. They found that several contributing factors to this increase in anxiety and depression include economic and financial stressors, technology, social media and internet use, socio-political factors, and then student life in the U.S. higher education setting by itself. And more than likely, this reality is only going to grow, isn't it? I mean, because technology isn't going to slow down. It's only going to get better. Our consumer capitalist culture isn't going to slow down anytime soon. So what do we do? Is there anything we can do? Because as we continue to lose the ability to be patient with those real life things that require patience, like marriage and parenting, relationships, the normal difficulties of life, we're going to continue to suffer. We're going to continue to grow more anxious. We're going to continue to grow more depressed because we don't know how to not do something. We don't know how to wait anymore and be patient. And that brings us to our text for today as we continue our study through this like uber practical book of James. And today we're going to be in chapter 5. We're going to focus on verses 7 through 12. We're going to read 7 through 12, but we're going to kind of focus on 7 through 11 here this morning. So if you have your phones, whatever, it's also going to be on the screen behind me, but follow along.
Be patient, therefore, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, being patient about it until it receives the early and the late rains. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Do not grumble against one another, brothers, so that you may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. As an example of suffering and patience, brothers, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Behold, we consider those blessed who remain steadfast. You have heard of the steadfastness of Job, and you have seen the purpose of the Lord, how the Lord is compassionate and merciful. But above all, my brothers, do not swear, either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under condemnation. Now, as we get cracking into this passage, this whole thing begins, verse 7 begins with a therefore. And when you see a therefore, you need to go back and see what was written before. And so in verses 1 through 6, James boldly speaks to the rich. And in verses 2 and 3, he's speaking to people who are hoarding their wealth. In verse 4, he is speaking to people who are defrauding their workers of their earned wages. In verse 5, there are people that are living this self-indulgent, luxurious lifestyle. And then in verse 6, literally robbing people, and the poor especially, of life itself. And James tells those people who are oppressing and even murdering the poor to weep. Because God hears the cries of the oppressed, and he will bring the wicked to justice. Then in verse 7, he pivots. He pivots back to addressing Christians again, right? We read brothers like 3 or 4 times in those few verses. He's coming back and he's addressing Christians again, and he tells them to be patient because God will judge the wicked in his time. But they need to be patient because that's more than likely going to be longer than they want to wait. I want you to think for just a second. Think about how hard it is to be patient in those petty things that we just talked about, right? The things where we're waiting for someone to get ready, or we're waiting for the person, you know, to order at Starbucks or whatever it might be. Those petty things, it's already hard enough in those situations to be patient. But you know, if you've ever been truly hurt, if you've ever been truly betrayed or wronged, or you've experienced real injustice, it can be total agony, right? To be patient in those situations. We want our revenge. We want them to experience what we're going through right now. We want our version of justice to be served, and we want it right now. But it's interesting that James doesn't talk about being patient with those smaller things, those petty things at all. He goes right to the big stuff. He tells the people that they need to be patient in the huge injustices that they were experiencing, even watching people that they know being murdered. It's going to take something powerful. It's going to take something outright incredible to make us be patient in those situations and with those kinds of people. And if we can get that down, you know what I mean? You're going to be able to deal with the petty new like annoyances of life. Now, I think it's important before we look at how we get this type of patience, and we're going to get there, to look at what patience is and the kinds of patience that we need in our lives. So in this passage, we see 3 different aspects of patience, okay? In verses 7, 8, and 10, we see the word patient or patience, all right? And this is a passive virtue. It means forbearance. It means long-suffering. It means waiting, all right? We are patient when we're healing. So yesterday I was a moron, and I was cutting an onion, making a soup, and that's what this is about because I almost cut off the tip of my thumb. Okay, so I got done cutting it, and it was bleeding like crazy, and so I'm holding it over my head. I'm pushing on it really hard. I'm waiting for it to kind of slow down so I can bandage it up. Now, once I have it bandaged, what do I do now? I wait. That's all I can do at this point. I got to wait for it to heal. So we demonstrate this kind of patience when we wait for something to heal, when we wait for a broken bone or some kind of wound to heal. This is that passive virtue. Then in verse 8, James says, establish your heart. Another word for establish would be strengthen. This is more active, and it carries with it a sense of resolve. All right, in Luke chapter 9, verse 51, it says, when the days drew near for him, and we're talking about Jesus here, when the days drew near for him to be taken up, he set his face, he established his heart, he strengthened his heart to go to Jerusalem. It's the same word used here, to establish or strengthen your heart. Jesus was resolved to go to Jerusalem, and nothing was going to stop him. We see this in soldiers that stand firm when they're getting ready, when they're ready for battle. We stand firm when someone attacks us, when somebody hurts us, and we neither give in to those attacks or return anger for anger. Okay? So that one's a little more active. But then, in verse 11, James says, we consider those blessed who remained steadfast. And steadfast is perseverance. This is the most active side of patience. Perseverance is resolve or determination to continue on the right course in spite of difficulty, in spite of struggle. And when I think of perseverance, I can't help but think of like Captain America in the Marvel movies, if you've seen all 812 of them or whatever there are now. But in the very first Captain America movie, before he even was Captain America, before he had any of his powers, he's this scrawny little dude, and he's in an alley, and he's getting his face kicked in by this bigger guy. But he keeps coming. He gets knocked down. He picks up a trash can lid. He comes at him. He gets knocked down again, and he keeps coming. And towards the end of that scene, he's standing there, and he's wobbly, and he's bleeding. And the guy's like, when are you going to stop? And then he says the best line ever, and it's repeated in every Captain America movie from then on. I could do this all day. That's perseverance. So when you put those three things together, waiting, standing firm, and persevering, you get the idea of patience that James tells us we need. I heard Tim Keller, the pastor in New York, he gave a great definition of patience that kind of sums this whole thing up. He said, patience is graciousness and steadiness in the face of delayed gratification. You got that? Patience is graciousness and steadiness in the face of delayed gratification. And when I think of graciousness, when I think of steadiness, I think of Jesus. And so in essence, patience is continuing to act like Jesus, no matter how you feel or what's happening around you. That's hard. And then James lets us know that we need this type of patience in a number of areas in our lives, don't we? First, we need this kind of patience in life, just life in general. Look at verse 7. Be patient, therefore, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, being patient about it until it receives the early and late rains. So farmers here illustrate godly patience with life very well. Farmers in that day, their lives were like a rhythm of working and waiting, working and waiting. They worked real hard to get the ground ready for that early autumn rain. And they had to wait for it. They didn't know when it was coming, but they knew it was coming. And when it came, then they had to be ready to go and plant once the soil was wet. And once they plant the seeds, now they just wait. Once the seeds are planted, the farmer waits for that late spring rain to come. They have to let God be God and wait for something that they can't control. That's what being patient with life is all about. There are things in life that take time. Everything can't be like Amazon Prime, where you only gotta wait 2 days and then it's all good. If you think about life, if you think about the things that really matter, those are things that took time. They don't come immediately. If you think about the relationships in your life, and I mean the real relationships, those relationships that you lean on, those relationships that help you grow and become a better person, those took time. You had to be patient as those developed. What about the skills you have? Whether it's something you use for your job or for fun or whatever, those take time to develop. Steph Curry, who many believe to be the greatest shooter in basketball, practices 2 to 4 hours a day, and then, after practice, makes 300 to 500 more basketball shots. You can't just pick up a ball, shoot the ball like 20 times, and then expect to make the NBA and be considered the greatest shooter in history. It takes time, patience, and patience with life is so important. Then we need patience with people, right? Look at verse 9. Do not grumble against one another, brothers, so that you may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. Now, listen, we've already kind of established that it takes time to develop relationships. But just dealing with people, no matter what, takes its own patience, doesn't it? People make mistakes. People hurt us, sometimes on purpose, sometimes not. People make what we would consider dumb decisions, and all people, everyone sins. You see, James is, he's pretty perceptive here. He knows that all the pressures of life, and especially those acts of injustice that can happen to us, they create this internal tension inside of us that then often we project onto people, right? We either take out our stress, our anxiety, our hurt, our anger on other people, and usually those are the people we love the most that we're doing that to. Or we speak against those people, against that person who has hurt us or that we have an issue with. In other words, we gossip, right? We grumble, we either grumble towards our loved ones and people about what's going on in our lives, or we grumble against people and we gossip about them. But we also have to note that it's interesting that James adds, do not grumble against one another so that you may not be judged. If you go back and look at all of the book of James that we've studied so far, every time James refers to Jesus' return, it's to encourage believers to stand firm under struggle, under pressure. But now, he wants us to remember the coming judgment whenever we grumble against each other. Now first, we have to remember that there is a judge, and it isn't us, okay? We are not him. James calls us to stop acting like we are the judge, looking down on those that sin, handing out our own punishments and criticisms and judgments on people. But it's also important here to remember that Christians, this is good news for Christians, those who have put their faith in Jesus as their Lord and Savior, we will not face God's wrath on Judgment Day. You see that? He's already taken care of the deserved punishment that we should get. He's taken care of that on the cross. There's none left for you now. But we will face God's assessment of every word and deed, as Matthew chapter 12, verses 34 through 37 tells us. So, as we deal with people, we need patience. We need to remember what 1 Peter 4 says, that love covers a multitude of sins, doesn't it? Because if we become people, or if you are already the kind of person who calls out every sin you ever see someone commit, or you make a big thing anytime anyone hurts you, eventually you're going to have no one around you because no one's going to want to be around you. We need to learn that we too are jerks sometimes, aren't we? We need to remember that we make mistakes too. We sin as well, and we hurt people from time to time. It's also important for us to realize that we don't know what someone is going through. We don't know what that person who's acting like that is going through. So we need to be gracious. We need to be patient with that. Someone once wrote, "Be kind. Everyone you meet is fighting a hidden battle." Right? So we need to be patient in life. We need to be patient with people, but we also need to be patient in suffering. Remember, chapter 5 starts with a description of what the rich were doing to poor Christians. They were suffering, and that's the context that the verses we're looking at today were written in. So then James then gives us examples of the prophets and Job to look at. Let's look at verses 10 and 11. He says, "As an example of suffering and patience, brothers, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Behold, we consider those blessed who remain steadfast. You have heard of the steadfastness of Job, and you have seen the purpose of the Lord, how the Lord is compassionate and merciful." So one of the saddest things that I see in the church today, and it's something that I've dealt with throughout my whole ministry, is what I'm going to call Christian stoicism. right? We're going through something difficult. We're going through something painful in our lives. And then we get to church, or we get around our church family, and we put on the smile, right? We put on the smile and we act like we're fine. You may share a prayer request, but we often will downplay it. We'll downplay it and we'll say, it's fine. God's got this, which again is true. God does got this. But the reason that we're still internally struggling is because deep down we don't really believe that. We know it, but we don't believe it. And we're anxious because we think that we are still the ones in control. You see, patience in suffering isn't about stoicism. It's not about not letting things bother you or not letting things get to you. You know how I know that? Because the examples we're given in for patience in suffering are the prophets and Job. When prophets spoke God's message, it was often met with just outright disgust. At best, people ignored their message. At worst, people attacked them, were violent towards them. And there are times where they have had enough, where the prophets have enough of their suffering and they cry out to God. I want you to listen to these words from Jeremiah 20. O Lord, you have deceived me, and I was deceived. You are stronger than I, and you have prevailed. I've become a laughingstock all the day. Everyone mocks me. Do you see? Jeremiah is accusing God of lying to him, of overpowering him, of coercing him to serve him. Those are real heavy emotions coming out towards God. There's no fake. There's no, it's okay, I'm fine. There's nothing like that there. And then you look at Job, and Job is a real interesting example, because if you read the book of Job, Job does not come off as the most patient dude ever. Job, like, he mourns his birth. He insists on his own innocence. He fights with his friends. He complains that he doesn't deserve any of what's happening to him. He basically demands that God explain himself. You see, these people, they explode sometimes. They lament sometimes. But here's why they're examples. They never stop doing what they're called to do. And even more so, they never, ever stop praying. They never stop praying. The passage I read to you from Jeremiah was a prayer. It started with, oh Lord. He is talking to God. Job laments. He complains to God. They never stop taking all their pain. They never stop taking all their hurt and all their anger and all their doubts and questions to God. That's why they're awesome examples of perseverance for us. And it should encourage you. It should free you to know that you can be that real with your God. You can take all your true feelings, all your real emotions to God. Again, remember who you're going to. He's the most powerful being in the universe. I think he can take it. But it also continues to show how much we depend on him, doesn't it? How much we need him. When we have those true feelings, to take those to God says, it yells, it shouts, I need you. I don't know how to do this without you. It's when you stop praying. It's when you stop crying out to God and you say something like, I'm done with you. I'll figure it out on my own. That's when we're in trouble. And lastly, and most importantly, patience with life, patience with people, patience in suffering. Most importantly, we need patience with God. I mean, this is the patience that allows us to be patient in all the other areas as well. Look at verses 7 and 8. Be patient, therefore, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. You know what? James knows Jesus' teachings, his brother. He knows his teaching very well, and he reiterates it for the believers that he's writing to. And in the Gospel of Matthew, we find some essential points about the return of Jesus. One, no one knows when he's coming back. No one. So when you hear something or read something that the end of the world is going to be July 12th, 2024, just turn the channel. It's a lie. Nobody knows when he's coming. Two, he's going to come back personally. He's going to come back with a host of angels, and it's going to be visible, and it's going to be unmistakable to all. So what that means is you aren't going to miss it, and neither will anybody else. You're not going to need Fox News or CNN to report Jesus is back. You're going to see it. You're going to know it's happening. Three, his coming back will bring an end to ordinary human history and final judgment of mankind. And four, believers should always be prepared for his return. And when he comes back, there's going to be joy in his presence for us, and we will fully then receive all of his blessings. Now, we need to understand that every believer, since Jesus went back to heaven, has believed that he was going to come back in their lifetime. And that's why James writes what he writes. He writes, the coming of the Lord is at hand. He believed it was going to come soon. So what do we do with that? We need to keep in mind a couple of things about the fact that we've been now waiting a couple thousand years for him to come back. One, 2 Peter tells us that God's scale of time is not ours, right? Here's what Peter writes, that with the Lord, one day is as 1,000 years and 1,000 years is one day. So we've been waiting a couple thousand years, 2 days for God. We're not operating on the same time scale here, okay? But two, and this one's amazing. If God delays from our perspective, okay, he's delaying to grant sinners more time to repent. Here's what Peter says. The Lord is not slow to fulfill his promise, as some count slowness, but is patient towards you, not wishing that any should perish, but that all should reach repentance. How cool is that? Yes, it seems like it's taking forever, and there's times that we're dealing with what's going on in our lives, and we're just like, Jesus, please come back. And he doesn't, and the reason he doesn't is because he's giving us more time to share the love of Jesus with other people so more people get to be in this family with us. That's amazing. And three, Peter also lets us know that he will come suddenly. He writes, but the day of the Lord will come like a thief. So here's what all that means. All that means, any day could be the very last day. Let that sink in for a second. Any day could be the last day. Think about how you prepare when you know visitors are coming. We have two visitors with us from Wisconsin. We know them very well. We grew up, like Jordan grew up with this girl, and she's been here many, many times. They were coming. They came at like 8 o'clock last night. They're leaving sometime after church, so less than 24 hours. Our house was cleaned from top to bottom, disinfected, vacuumed. Every ounce of laundry was done and folded and put away. Like, that was for people that we know real well that were coming for less than a day. When we know visitors are coming, someone that's important to us, we get ready. The Bible never promotes the question, hear this, the Bible never promotes the question, when will Jesus return? It doesn't focus on that. But what it always promotes, what it always focuses on is the question, will you be ready when he returns? And know that it is going to be amazing. And that word is, it doesn't work at all. Amazing, wonderful, fantastic. None of those words do justice to what it's going to be like when Jesus returns. When he comes back and he sets all things right, he's going to bring justice where there hasn't been any. He's going to vindicate those who've been oppressed. He's going to make all wrongs right. And once and for all, he's going to take away pain and suffering and sin and death. Yeah, amen. And listen, if all that's true, right? Listen, if all that is true, then when those things happen every minute of every day that bother us, that annoy us, that frustrate us, we can either trust God in his timing, or we can trust our own timing and our own insight, and we can develop an ulcer. I mean, that's kind of what it boils down to. Okay, so how do we get this kind of patience? How do we get this? Well, first, we do need to practice a few things. What did we learn? We need to process our lives through prayer. Remember Job? That dude knew how to pray. Yes, he complained. Yes, he whined. But he did all that to God. He took all of that to God. Keep praying. Keep praying no matter how you feel. No matter how frustrated you are. No matter how long you've been waiting. Keep praying. Two, we need to kind of daily remind ourselves that we don't know everything. We think we do, but we got to remember God is the only one who's omniscient. He is the only one who literally knows everything. Remember what Pastor Doug preached about last week. We don't know what's supposed to happen. You may think you do, but you don't. Only God knows everything. So make this a practice. Daily say, I don't know. I don't know why I can't find a job. I don't know why my mom is going through what she's going through. I don't know why this keeps happening to me. But that keeps us going to God. It takes us back to number one, that we keep praying. We keep taking those questions and going to God. And three, we need to remember what we learned a few weeks ago when we looked at chapter one. Chapter one, verses 2-4, that trials and suffering, those are opportunities to grow in your love for God so that you can be ready for whatever he calls you to do to help or serve others. So there are some things that we can practice, but it's not enough just to practice those things. We also need to remember who Jesus is and the ultimate act of patience that he did for us. Look at the end of verse 11. You have seen the purpose of the Lord, how the Lord is compassionate and merciful. That's the reason that we can remain optimistic in the face of adversity and how patience can grow. He is compassionate and merciful. Those are terms that convey this kind of deep-seated, visceral feelings and emotions of love. He doesn't just say, I love you. These convey the emotion and the feeling that comes with that love. Back in 2002, there was a story that made national headlines. You probably remember it. A 14-year-old girl named Elizabeth Smart was abducted from her home. And 9 months later, she was found. She was found in a disguise on the street of a small western town with the two people who had kidnapped her. And 9 months had gone by, so she was now 15. And at the time that she was found, she had enough liberty to be strolling around on a street. She could have taken chances to call for help, right? But she didn't. She didn't run to the police officer that was on the street. Instead, it was the officer who saw her, noticed her, and went and took her into custody. And so the question that kind of puzzled everyone was, why wasn't she trying to escape? And when her father appeared on TV, you could kind of see the same question written all over his face, and yet there was this joy, this heartfelt joy that ruled every word, every gesture, because his daughter was home. The emotions of love filled his face, and they infused his voice. However confusing her behavior was, he loved his kid. Right? He loved his kid, and it's the same with us. God's love for you, God's love for us is so much more than some dispassionate, detached interest in our well-being. It goes so much deeper than that. Here, James uses the language of emotional feelings to describe his love for us. But then we also see his love in action. Even more than words, we see his act of patience for you. I've used this before. I've used this passage before, but I love it. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 2. It says, who for the joy that was set before him, that's you and I, the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross. He persevered on it. He stayed on it, despising the shame. He stood firm. He stayed on the cross. He demonstrated a patience towards people who were committing the most unjust act ever. And he prayed for them. And he said, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. He demonstrated a patience with God. Remember that scene when he's in the Garden of Gethsemane and he is in complete and total agony because he knows what's coming. He knows he's about to be separated fully from his Father, who he had enjoyed the most perfect and intimate and loving relationship and trust and connection and dependence on ever. And that was all going to be taken away from him. And yet, as he's praying and as he's crying out and he's asking for none of this to happen, can you please do it a different way? He says, but not my will, but yours be done. Why? Why did he do that? Why did he endure all that? Why did he stay on the cross? He did it for you. And now, because he took all of our punishment that we deserved by dying on the cross, by staying on the cross, God can now be infinitely and unconditionally patient with us. In spite of all of our flaws, in spite of all of our faults, forever. Forever. That's what we need to grow in patience. And then lastly, to grow in patience, we look ahead to his return, don't we? We look ahead when all of our hopes and all of our dreams will be fulfilled and he makes everything right again. I mean, what an awesome day that's going to be. Let's pray.